Welcome to the Seattle Public Library's podcasts of author readings and library events, a series of readings, performances, lectures, and discussions. Library podcasts are brought to you by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation. To learn more about our programs and podcasts, visit our website at www.spl.org. To learn how you can help the Library Foundation support the Seattle Public Library, go to foundation.spl.org. The podcast you're about to hear was recorded in 2011. I'm Chris Higashi, the program manager of the Washington Center for the Book at the Seattle Public Library. Welcome to the Central Library, and thanks so much for being here tonight to help welcome Russell Simmons to the Seattle Public Library. So thanks first to Elliott Bay Book Company for inviting us to co-present this evening, to the Seattle Times for generous promotional support for library programs, and finally to the Seattle Public Library Foundation, which this year is celebrating its 30th anniversary. The foundation represents thousands of people in our community who give gifts, large and small, to support our libraries. So to the foundation donors who are here with us tonight, we want to say thank you very, very much for your support. So now let me turn the podium over to Rick Simmonson from Elliott Bay Book Company, who will introduce our special guest and tell you about the book signing and where that's going to take place. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Chris, and thank you all very much for being here tonight. 4 years ago, on a decidedly warmer evening, Russell Simmons came to Seattle, and it was a program that Elliott Bay and the Seattle Library did at South Park Community Center, and it was, at that time, for his wonderful inspirational book, Do You, a book that was just then published 4 years ago that has had a great kind of life. There's a lot of books about inspiration and vital messages that get published, but few really stick. And this book, which Russell Simmons did 4 years ago, is very much one of those that has. He's here tonight with another book, and a book that sort of builds on what goes on in Do You, but it takes other directions and other depths, especially it's an area, a book of depths. This new book entitled Super Rich, Having It All, a book that works off that title about what richness is, and in this country and in this society, there's certain things we feel drawn to when we hear the word rich. What Russell Simmons does in this book is let you go to that plane if you want to, the material wealth to have things. But it's very much about a different form of wealth and of richness as well, taking readers and people who hear about it tonight through levels of, it includes spiritual work, it includes different practices and forms from different disciplines that have come from different religions and traditions over the years. He will talk about this tonight, he will answer questions, and then following all of these, this door over here will part. We have copies of Super Rich and Do You over at the table over here. And on the other side, in the other room, he'll be at a table to sign copies of his books and to visit with you more. Russell Simmons, of course, he walked out, he gave a response. He's, on one level, needs not so much of an introduction. He's had an incredible presence and influence on this country's culture. And not only, certainly, with Deaf Jam Music and Deaf Poetry Jam and the various productions and business things, clothing line, but also even more behind the scenes, he's been very good at not only with his own work, but helping others, getting business enterprises going, and doing a lot of good, vital, and necessary philanthropic work. All of these are addressed somewhat in this book that he's with Super Rich, but I think the real message are what each of us as readers takes from reading the book and looking at our own lives and using it in our own lives from there. So without further ado, thank you very much again. Thank you to the Seattle Public Library, and thank you all. And now please join in giving a warm welcome to Seattle on a cold night to Russell Simmons.
Thank you. Wow, where do I begin? No one was more surprised than I was when Do You came out and it became such a big bestseller so quickly. I wrote the book. They gave me money. I gave it to charity, a lot of it. And I wrote the book. It was as a kind of a cleansing of all the practice of yoga that I'd been, for 15 years, had been studying. So it had benefited me so much, I thought writing the book would be a fun exercise, and that I hoped someone would read it, but I certainly didn't. Oprah got a hold of it, and so she made it a bestseller. And then for the last 4 years or so, people have come to me and told me that the book had a profound effect on them, even a life-changing effect on some. So that inspired me to write this book, but this book was written not only as a way of bringing the teachings together and simplifying them for myself, but really as an offering. I thought that the book would be, you know, because people are slipping so much into poverty and so much struggle, and especially in the African American community, I thought about the men on the corners and the men in the prisons. You know that one out of every three African Americans are scheduled for prison. So people are suffering unconscious behavior, and I thought that the book would be, and of course, I talked about all of the unconscious of the collective in many ways, and I was just, even though targeting one group, and so the book came out, and even just before it came out, I realized it was for everyone, that in fact, Wall Street needed it more than the men in the prison, that that our president, our politicians, their behavior, our cruel behavior towards each other, towards the world, the less compassionate choices that we make, all of those things are in the book, and also ways to be happier and to relieve suffering. The subject of the book suits anyone. It just happens that the book is very simple in its translations. And again, I say translation, but it comes from in the many scriptures, the Yoga Sutras, the Bhagavad Gita, the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, all my studies of Yogananda's work, and I find that all that stuff, it runs parallel. My brother's a preacher, so I find that all that stuff kind of goes hand in hand with any other scripture. It just so happens that this book is based in yogic sutra, yogic scripture. There's nothing I wrote in this book that you can't find in the Bible, the Quran, or the Torah, Buddhist scripture, nothing in there that is contradiction to what you may believe as a spiritual being. So anyway, that's the short of it. I thought that, you know, writing this book would be helpful for some, but it turns out it's really helpful for a lot of people. I got some great reviews, and this book is a bestseller without Oprah. Which is like, so that's a shock. But I got great reviews. I got one bad review. I've had 5 stars in places that I wouldn't believe would ever even pick up a self-help book, much less a book based in scripture, you know, about giving when their job is getting. But anyway, it turned out that Business Week, this one guy, it was really an honor because he took Deepak's book, which came out on the same day, and my book, and said it's a bunch of crap. It was a Business Week. And it's really when I know these fuckers need this book. So that really affirmed, made me, you know, more confident. I should speak to more people. I shouldn't just go visit prisons. I should see all kinds of people. And that I get to Seattle, and this may be the most diverse group I've seen, which is really beautiful. I mean, to see this group. So anyway, so the book is about super rich, and it's a state of consciousness. I could have named it something else. I'd have ruined it. You wouldn't be here, and no one would buy it. And I wouldn't be able to talk specifically about what their scripture says about it. But the idea of super rich is to live in a state of needing nothing, which is incidentally could be a state of yoga. It could be union with God, but also could be a state of needing nothing. It's a state of yoga. But you could also say that was Christ consciousness, needing nothing, and nirvana, and yogis, again, samadhi, and what is it, Captain Dennis? Taqwa. The Muslims call it taqwa, right? This is the state of union with God, or the self, if you don't like God. Operating from this, and so it works out good, because my brother, who is a prosperity preacher, made me very uncomfortable about the book, because the book is so much, and I've been to lectures, great teachers who I adore, who've spoken, and the first thing they say, give it all away. And I see people like sneaking out the back of the room, and I sit there with all my shit, like smiling, like, I gave a donation when I came. But the idea of giving it away, or the attachment to it, is mostly what they mean. But that idea, still, the way the book is, the first chapter is redefining rich. And the book was written in 2 months. It was like I had to get it out of me. It was very easy. The first chapter, redefining rich, took a long time. And the reason it took so long is because I just didn't want you to throw the book out the window. Some of the people, especially who I wrote it for, I thought they might think that the book was only about materialistic things, and that if I tell them you don't need anything, then what good is the book? But Joey gave me something. Rev Run gave me something. And he's a prosperity preacher. I mean, he's in a line. If you're black, you must know Reverend Ike, Bishop Jordan. He's in a line with these three, and so he is a prosperity preacher. They hold up their keys. If you don't own a home, you're homeless. Hold your keys up there, hold it. If you don't own your home, you're homeless. Anyway, so today prosperity preaches, but he still, in the science, he would tell you that, and we talked about this years ago, but then it came up and it helped me finish the first chapter, that Jesus taught two sermons, one for the masses and one for his disciples. And for the masses, he told them, if you do this, if you're a great servant, and you're a good giver, and your intentions are pure, and you take care, become a really good giver, you'll be a great getter. And we all know good givers are great getters. So it's easy and to digest. If you're anxiety-filled, you have to pay the Romans your taxes on time, that's a good rap. And you would then, work from the inside as he told you. You were always confident because he told you. You could trade. You could trade goodness for money and pay your bills. But he told his disciples, if you do this, you'd be really happy, and you would, just be happy and be closer to God. And the disciples took that and with faith, and of course they were better getters because they were better givers. And so I couldn't give you the secret because I couldn't tell you that if you got these things, they would matter. Tell you the fact that they, are small, that the benefits are fringe benefits of this behavior. So somewhere in between, I kind of gave you both sides, enough so that you might read a second chapter. The book is about giving. It's about practices that make it easy. It's about freedom. There's a simple chapter on meditation, which I found. I'm on the David Lynch Foundation, and I give meditation to tens of thousands of kids. I mean, we do as a group. And it's tremendous, the effect on school kids, their quiet time, and any individual who sits still for 20 minutes a day will find their brain lights up and the gray gets wider, and you can see from all kinds of perspectives, medical and just, metaphysical. You just know it's better. It's better. You sit still, it's better. And there's tons of research on it, and so it is a simple chapter that explains meditation in a way that I've already gotten so many people that have tweeted me or seen me and said that the meditation chapter has changed their life. So I hope that if anyone gets the book, that they'll read that chapter, because that's really a life changer for many. It certainly was for me. So the book, it was fun writing the book. The greatest gift is to see people's response. It's a 4 week now, 4 week in a row, it's been a bestseller in the New York Times, which is a tremendous honor. I mean, I'm a hip hop guy, a greedy entrepreneur. I wrote a book about consciousness and people buy it. It's a big blessing, right? There's some politics in it, little things. I mean, political things that have to do with people. I'm concerned a little bit about the workers. It's the oldest trick in the book. You give all the money to the rich and tell the poor we don't have no budget. That's my politics, my belief. So the book, I think, is a fun, it's a simple read. It's 180 pages. I said it was going to be 100 pages, and then we wrote 400 and edited it down to where it is now. And I really don't, it's such a diverse group. If the people have questions, I'd like to really deal with the questions. And I like for people to ask questions, like not, I have a hip-hop record and could you help me, or something, or, something that really relates to, that everybody else may want to know the answer to. I said, you first. Well, now people can play on the street and somebody find them, put them on the internet. Huh? The question he's asking me is, what do I think about music today and the fact that what he's talking about is how it gets exposed, how it grows, how artists become popular, right?
Yeah, that's important.
How it affects culture?
Yeah, yeah.
I think, let me say this, I'll talk a little bit, because people probably don't want to know all the answers to this, because it's a little bit off subject, but I would say that the poets, since I'm a rap guy, right, the poets are really reflections of us. We hate to say it, say, oh, those guys are from the hood, I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm not sexist. I'm not racist. I'm not homophobic. But I think the rappers are less sexist than their parents. They may use language you don't like, but they're less sexist than the priest. I think they're less homophobic, for sure, they never, than their fathers and mothers. They're less, they're certainly less racist. I mean, they all live together. It's like they are the future of America. They're like, that's the place where there's this total integration. If you watch the Grammys, like they're all best friends and collaborate and work together. And then they're less gangster than our government, for sure. So, you know, I'm okay with what the poets are saying. I'm kind of happy that they still, the people who are coming out of poverty, who are saying things that you wouldn't hear otherwise, and they have a big voice for people who are mostly locked out. So I love them for that, and I'm always, you know, excited to hear when they, you know, whatever it is, almost Jesus walks, fuck the police. They're both fine by me. Which is a protest song, in case you didn't. Next, for, you know, police abuse. Okay, my man. Well, yeah, he said nappy-head hoes. I was on his show recently, the guy, yeah. Well, you know, I'm not a language person. Semantics, I'm intention. You know, intention is my concern. You know, I like people to say things that are sweet or inspiring, uplifting. Doesn't matter the language. People say such sweet stuff and then they abuse the animals, the plant, each other all day long. Put people, I mean, so language is so small to me. If you don't want to say to someone who, you know, is going to be offended by a certain thing. I ain't going to say, that's my bitch to Oprah. I won't do that. That's my bitch. I love it, I doubt, right? but, or, you know, you speak to people in a way that inspires them if you can. Try to say sweet things that are uplifting and good. And I'm not too worried about language, so I don't get it. That's not my debate. And I listen to the records, and I think they bring people together. I'm not worried about that. It's not something I spend my time. I'm more concerned with so many other issues. I'm worried, for instance, something maybe foreign to everybody in this room, the 15 billion suffering farm animals. Maybe the worst comic disaster in human history. No one talks about that. They worry about me saying a word, you know. But meanwhile, they're destroying the planet. The ozone layer by double all your planes, trains, and automobiles. Meanwhile, they're taking up all the oil that the army don't take. Meanwhile, they're taking all the water and all the grain and making you sick, and they're causing karma that just the humankind can't stand. But no one discussed it. So I'm more concerned with the 15,000 Africans who died of lack of clean water yesterday. I'm concerned with human suffering and real things that I think, I mean, it's my own concerns, of course, but so the language issue, I don't worry. Well, you're always discovering yourself. I mean, everybody wakes up in the morning. Most everybody who's got a decent heart wakes up deciding on what they're going to give and not what they're going to get. It's etched inside you. What's in the scripture that promotes happiness in you is in you. Looking for it speeds it up. You know, it gets you a little closer and you operate from it a little more just by making the effort to operate from it. But my vegan diet came as a result of, you know, practicing yoga for years and being surrounded by vegans and hearing the stories and finally digesting it. You know, people say it in a loving way, it'll eventually sink in. You don't want to contribute. The Buddha would say, check for yourself. Don't just do it because the collective is doing it. Like, check for you. Don't let the preacher tell you or the monk. Check for yourself. When I look at my meditation, I decide I don't want to be part of that. It's for compassionate reasons and, you know, and I feel more healthy. I lost weight and I feel good for the last 10 years as a vegan. You're next. I'm sorry. Oh my God. Meditation. I got in it through practicing yoga and it was a natural part of it. In yoga, there are 8 parts. There's the yamas, these social laws, and then these niyamas, the observances and the physical practices. And one of the parts of the 8 steps in yoga is meditation. And by practicing meditation, you know, it really inspired me a lot, changed me a lot. And then I discovered TM, which is an easy way to give it to other people and also sharpen it improved my practice, my meditation practice, dramatically. So I recommend it. I'm on the board that we give it to kids, tens of thousands of kids really worldwide. And I think it's fantastic and it's a great tool. There's this woman here first. You first. And then you. No, behind you. She.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh,
Oh,
The thing, the poet's job is throughout history, is it be a capsule of what we're experiencing. I like when I hear a Public Enemy record, and it was all about, you know, taking control of the self and doing good and being a good part of your community and lifting your people up. I like when Kanye West says Jesus walks, but I got to accept when NWA says after police, after all of the abuse in that community, for example, or whatever truth. I mean, mostly, even rappers that are gangsters, they always end up like Scarface. They always tell you at the end, you know, it's not quite right. I'm not happy living like this. So it's what it is. Young people sometimes rebellious for the sake of it. Those artists don't last too long. So I just let it, you know, it's just poetry. I can't, you know, I don't think it's my job to judge it and just kind of see what I get from it. People come from suffering. People of color are suffering in every country in the world. This country, there's opportunity, though, of course. This country is, you know, something Elijah Muhammad said about the chain around the people. They move the chain, and sometimes the people don't move. They're still suffering, even though the chains are gone. You know, and so the idea of lifting consciousness, giving people a chance to take advantage of what's right in front of them. And I don't have the answer. I mean, how do we repair the past? Only education and opportunity is the best way. I don't think giving anybody any money. We've given Indians money, and we found out it's not helped them much. So repairing the past is decent education. Repairing the past is not doubling the size of the classrooms in Detroit, which is going on now. It's horrible. I think it's a terrible money grab going on right now in this country. The poor are getting poorer, and I got a tax break. I think it's fucking ridiculous. You're next. I'm sorry. You're next. What'd you say? Oh, yeah. I sold little drugs. I wasn't no Nicky Barnes or nobody. But, you know, I thought I was a gangster for a minute. I was in a gang. I ain't no better. I was stupid as shit. Thanks for bringing that out, girls. Yeah, I got caught up a little bit. Where's this sweet woman with the nice question? Where are you? Is that you? It's in my first book. I had some history that when I thought, you know, the stupidity. She has the book. Yeah, life. It was called Life and Death, Sex, Drugs, Money, and God. God was last for a long time. I'm sorry. Where's the woman? There's a woman here. We just went. Yes, it's you. I'm sorry. Yeah. You look like you have a nice question, like not about drugs or nothing. It might not be true, though. But go ahead. See what you say. You get in a lot of shit free. I went to the yoga class today. It was sold-out class. I took the spot. The woman brought me in. The teacher didn't start. I was 2 minutes late. She didn't start. And it was a hot class. It was kind of a hot vinyasa practice. Very tough class. Anyway. And then he said, oh, no, thank you, Ms. Simmons. I'm glad you enjoyed it. It's like, can I pay? Can I buy a coconut water or something? So that's the famous part. And that only should be used, I believe, to benefit others. And the money part, it's like, I always say this, and I get a good laugh, but it's true. No matter how big your mansion, you can sit your ass in only one seat. And there's nothing they can give you on the outside to make you happy. And so that's about the toys and the money. So that's up to you, the happiness thing. And you learn that whether you're really poor or whether you're really rich, over lifetimes, or maybe in one life. But it's the reality. Happiness is here. So the toys, you know, they're for giving. Cycle of giving. So I run a bunch of charities, and I'm traveling now, and I'm giving this money away, and I'm going to go 20 cities, and I want kids to hold this book. And now I want politicians to hold it as well. Yeah, it's a practice. It's a practice. Yeah, when you're feeding people junk and your cousin needs a new flat screen and they just need new stuff all the time. You know, and other people are really suffering. You might be helping them, but you're helping your cousin. You have to be a wise steward, they say. My brother, Christian brother, would say over your money, he said, you know, God gives it to you so you can be wise, not to, you know, you don't think you're a great giver and you're giving monies to or things to people who don't need it just because they're pressuring you. It's a responsibility because this can feed someone, this can support someone's growth, this can be a benefit to someone that's good. And so maybe you have to be careful about what you give and what foundations you support. And You don't just write blind checks to charities and say, I'm a good charity man. You have an organization that checks their work. You show up where you spend your money. To the school in Africa, you visit it, you know it, you know. So that's part of having money. And then the other thing is really your celebrity is useful. I just wrote a blog today. It's on the cover of the Huffington Post by now. And it's a phenomenal thing because it came to me the other day in San Francisco. There was a moderator who asked me questions. He kept getting off the subject of spirituality and getting on the subjects of politics. And I have some very strong beliefs about simple things. People getting jobs, decent education, health care. I'm probably more to the left than Dennis Kucinich. I'm probably more to the left than Keith Olbermann. So I have my opinion about taking care of other Americans, other people around the world, but in this country, since I'm okay with the taxes, in other words. So I have this blog I wrote today about the workers and about the money grab, and I keep thinking about it because it really is an old trick that they give all the benefit to the rich and then tell the poor there's no budget. And so my celebrity, in the end of it, it says, America's not so far. The guy's acting a little like Gaddafi. His rap is crazy. There'll be dire consequences if you're in the street. Then he told someone else he could put agitators in the crowd. The governor shouldn't put agitators in the crowd. That's not American. Peaceful protest is a peaceful protest. You don't make it, you don't create unrest. Give you an excuse to clean the streets. That's horrible. So that's one thing he said. And, so I think the unions are necessary. Sometimes it's bureaucracy, but people need protection. The policeman in Detroit, I think it's all like what Martin Luther King talked about, the poor people's revolution. I know people don't think they're poor. They hate hearing the word poor. Politicians never say poor. But I talk about the working poor a lot. The guy who's a policeman who works, he can barely make it to work. He's in Detroit, imagine. He goes to work, can barely afford the gas. He's paying for his family. He's trying to send his kids to school, public school. His working, his wage, his quality of life. He's a proud man who works. And if you work and your spirit is rich, you're okay. But then again, the average CEO is making 301 times the price of the average worker. I don't need 301 times what an average person gets. And I'm saying, and so America, I'm not, it's if there's any kind of adjustment of wealth that they talk about, it's the opposite. It's the rich getting more. It's not the poor, the government giving the poor all these additional benefits. It's the lobbyists and the way that the government works, and people are slipping into poverty. And the working poor, and you think about what Dr. King said about the African Americans who were natural allies to the union. If they start tweeting, if Kim Kardashian and Ashton Kutcher and Puffy and a bunch of people start tweeting, we could create a very, very aggressive voting bloc or shift in consciousness or concern for the poor. All of them, every Hollywood, they're Hollywood liberals, they all start tweeting, they can create a revolution. And that's what the blog is about the potential for America to really transform itself to a more compassionate and loving society through the use of social media, like the rest of the world. Okay. I think it's hurt. Yeah. Oh. Well, the thing about globalgrind.com is that I look at there is a post-racial America. It doesn't have to be the whole country, but it exists. And there are, you look at the pop sites, whether they're the Huffington Post or their area of Huffington, they don't really understand the influence of this hip-hop culture in mainstream America. And then if you look at the sites that cover it exclusively, they don't understand it either. Like a black site will say, in white folks' news, the top black site would say that. But I see that people will consume a Disney character, a story from one nude Disney character, and then Jay Electronica, brand new rapper. And they'll consume both those stories, will be equally as excited about it, and that's the way they see culture. The way we see music is the way America is becoming. When you go to the Grammys, you see this integration. You see this real thing happening. And when you see in a black president, there must be some shift. And so our site is based in this big white space. White space means uncharted territory, where there's a real honest integration. And it's very heavily influenced by hip-hop, but it's the urban graduates, and it's the rest, and it's very successful because of it in terms of its growth. So it's proof that it exists. Good question. I don't think they'll pick it up or not, because I'm not going to let them pick it up without a lot of shift and power in terms of the way the editing does. So they've never done what I want to do. I don't want any friends embarrassed. I don't want any charities undermined. I don't want any... I don't mind making fun of myself. You can do that all day, but be careful about my friends, my charities, and my business associates. So that's going to have to be in the contract. Oh, you jumped her. But you go ahead. She'll go next. Go ahead. A single say. I would like to... My single... That's a tough one. Consciousness. What is it? The yogis say to be in union with God, you know, or Christ consciousness, or nirvana, or these kind of things. When you think about this, I like to think of it being part of... Being connected, another way of deciding. So if God was the ocean, you'd be a cup of God. And isolation and sickness and being totally invested gives you power over the ocean even. You can even make changes. And so to be connected, to be compassionate and feeling. You know, you see your friend bump their head, you say, oh, shit. Right? You grab your own head. That thing, that connectivity to that suffering animal, to even the abusive Mother Earth, to feel that it's all you, that you are a piece of all of this living, breathing God. And the person who really feels in union with God, the top chakra, the Sahasrara chakra, that is open to being connected and being a servant for Mother Earth, the animals, and human beings. That's a enlightened being. It's a lot of sentences, right? You said one sentence. There's a woman who was before you, but she didn't. There she is. They're very graphic and clear, too. There's always been, well, here's the thing. Well, they're different subjects. One is sexism that has existed, and is, I really do believe this generation's a little better, but it's still horrible. You're born, and you will die, and your kids are probably born and will die in a very sexist world. All the scriptures, man written, you know, it comes from inside, right? So a man wrote it down. Or maybe God gave it to him and said, abuse women? No, I don't think. It's abusive. Sexism is rampant. It's everywhere you live, you're born, you'll die. Just like there'll be blacks who would, you know, born and die, most parts of the world, unequal. It's very bad. It's nothing, it's something people just accept. People speak up, good for them. If they ask me to speak up, I'll use my voice when I can. But I just, you know, how do I feel about it? I wish it was different, I guess. I wish I could say I wish it was different. I do. My kid, Yoki Lee, is dancing. She thinks she's Beyonce. You know, what am I do? You know, I mean, I don't know the answer either. You know, in terms of sexual, it's always a good excuse. Krishna blew the flute for so many women before he met Radha, and then Radha was married, and he was married too, and. It's a very different, the dynamic between a man and woman sexually, I'm not puritanical about the fact that women just by Obama's, you know, work are guaranteed equal pay just now is appalling to me. So I just know that there's still, you know, a lot of work to do. That's hard to answer anybody's question. I don't think I can answer a second question by the same person. So I'm sorry, brother, I'm not going to be able to do that, but you can go now, then you go next. I'm not a big reader. I read a lot of, so many times editing it, was nutty. But this book is based on scripture, the Yoga Sutras, the Bhagavad Gita, the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, the textbook of yoga psychology, Autobiography of a Yogi, Yogananda, the Science of Religion. Those books I read and play with. Some of them I read multiple times. Another book that really influenced me a lot, and I gave it to Oprah, was The Power of Now. Because as a practicing yogi, the second sutra, the Yoga Sutras, is 194 threads or sutras. And I call it the book The Science of Happiness. And the second sutra is Yoga Shita Friti Nirodha, and it means in Sanskrit. Don't nobody know Sanskrit except people who study scripture, but it's written...
the second sutra, it's yoga happens, or union with God occurs when with the cessation of the fluctuation of the mind. So when the mind is still, there's only God. And that's so the power of now described it to me. I knew it, you know, and I knew it, and I kind of instinctive, but he had so many descriptions over and over again about presence. The one that got me, the first one that got me early in the book was the car accident. You been in a car accident, anybody? Everything moved really slow. Could you imagine if you were awake always and saw the world that way always? You weren't afraid either. Things were just moving slow. So if you were driving a car and the world was like that, it's why you connect your breath to every movement in the physical practice. It's why you meditate. You want to slow the world down so you can see it. So if you're driving a car, you see every single flower, everything that's in front of you. And that's the kind of consciousness that they would call, you know, enlightened. And that's what he described a lot in the book, The Power of Now, Enlightenment. And it kind of rang a bell for me. You could hear a key turning in my head. It's like, there you go. That's yoga. That's Christ conscious. And you know, then more study, everyone said that, but I had to hear it from him to really understand yoga. And then his next book, Oprah, made 35 million people downloaded it in 1 week when she had a class, and just a huge phenomena. Eckhart Tolle. I met him in the backyard of one of my yoga teacher's house before he was popular. He was sitting there smiling and just unbelievable person, just happy all the time. So I guess he's enlightened. Wait, did I promise anybody? There was somebody I said next. Where? You, my man, right there. Thank you. Every day I roll over, light a candle. I don't care if I'm late. First thing, I roll over, I stretch enough that I can sit comfortably and I won't be in pain sitting. I light a candle, I meditate every day. Most important part of the day, because you... It's good to meditate on an empty stomach, just so you know. And also the physical practice, you should have 3 hours of no food before you eat practice. At least that's what it said in the scripture. There's different meditations. I was having this discussion with Deepak Chopra about all the different kinds of meditation. There's candle gazes. There's all kinds of meditation. The mantra-based meditation is what I do and what I teach in that book. You know, if you were to sit still and you just repeat a mantra in your mind and you sit still, the mantra will become more attractive than the thoughts. But if you have thoughts, you can gaze off into your thoughts and watch your thoughts. You bring it back to your mantra and you sit. And the one thing that every meditator needs is patience. Patience is the key word in meditation. Because when you sit down and you say, I'm going to meditate, your mind's like a monkey. It's going to go crazy. Like, I'm not doing this. I'm not, and the mind will just keep telling you that, and you believe him. But if you sit still, saying, well, you're not going to stop moving, and I'm not going to move either. So if you sit still, the monkey, like a monkey in a cage, and if you bang yourself against the wall of the cage enough, you'll sit still too. The monkey will sit. Then you'll say, oh my God, I'm meditating. And then the monkey will move around a little more, because now you're thinking, then it'll transcend the thoughts even more and more. And that's how the patience works, and that's how meditation sets in. Not on your time, but on God's time. You this time, I know you've been waiting. And you're next. Yeah, well, you missed a lot. I was operating under these principles whenever I got it right. When I made a good song, the melody was in my head, and there was nothing going on but the melody. There was a moment where I say, wait till they hear this record. There was never a moment when I said, while I'm making that good record, that I said, I'm going to get paid. Never. Well, I wouldn't make a good record. You have to, you know, you engage thoroughly in your process. That's your prayer. Your work makes you happy. If you're doing what you do to get an end, it says in the scripture, you have control over your action alone and never the fruit. And it goes on and talk about that. Yeah, even the thought of the fruit or the reaction or the result is such a distraction. It takes you away from your work. When the result comes, oh my God, I've seen so many artists, you know, and I've had my own experience. You get that Rolls Royce, you drive it around the corner, you park it, you say, shit, 400 grand? And then at the next Rolls Royce, you look at it. You don't even drive it nowhere. But I'm not going nowhere. I don't need the car. And then, you know, it's so unimportant. And when you attach yourself to the high that you get from the things that they give you, it causes extreme sickness. And so those people who value things, and the more things they have that they value, the sicker they are. And they do, and so if they're attached to those things, there's no way around the suffering. So you have to be attached to your work. You have to love giving, because that's really where all the happiness comes from. And that's not something I made up. It's in every book, over and over, by every prophet. Aware of a conscious rapper, like you said, KRS-One is a good example. Public Enemy is another great example, but they're political. A person who writes things that he thinks are uplifting and conscious and promote consciousness, but truth is the same. So I don't really, I don't like to separate them. Oh, he's a good conscious guy, and he's a gangster, and they're poets, you know. And someone, and I like beautiful poetry. I like uplifting poetry. But I think it would be nice if all the rappers wanted to write all sweet things. But then it would have to be nice that all the reality would be all as sweet as the poetry. But until then, I don't mind hearing all of it. You're next. I'm sorry. No, you go. If not only for young people, but in general, I always call Oprah the queen of consciousness because of the books that she promoted and the way they shifted so many people's thoughts. The fact she goes to that factory farm, I always think she doesn't go far enough, but just the work she's doing is so good. You hear Bill Clinton and Richard Branson, and you hear now even Rupert Murdoch's wife, and somebody just told me this, Rupert Murdoch's wife and Wendy Murdoch and somebody writing a vegan cookbook, Arianna Huffington. People are shifting some. If everybody was a yogi, Dennis Kucinich would be president. He'd have an anti-war machine and be billions of dollars invested in promoting peace. He would have some concern about the suffering of the farm animals. He would have all the things that I personally believe that I don't think it's, I mean, we go wrong. The collective goes wrong. They put people in ovens. They enslave people. They bomb innocent people. They abuse shit. They watch as ethnic cleansing goes on. Even today, they just do things that don't seem like they really come out of the scripture. Collective, the whole group sits through and watches it. So the idea that, that people are practicing yoga and reading these scriptures that are kind of separate from religious ideas, but are really just about the core of what's in religion and the core of the prophet's words about love and compassion and about respecting everyone, I mean, look what we're doing now. I'm the chairman of a group called the Foundation for Ethnic Understanding. And we have imams and rabbis mostly. It was really all religions and all ethnicities. But lately, we've created hundreds of programs around the world where imams speak in synagogues and rabbis speak in mosques. And they find this common thread, and it's phenomenal the way it's growing, spreading around the world. So if I've done a lot of stuff that's trendy, made poetry kind of hot for a minute, made a lot of hot comedians, right? Made a lot of hot rappers. Made urban clothing cool. I was the first one. I was in Macy's, right? I was one of the first. So I've been involved in a lot of trendy things. What if a trendy thing was that everybody was, looking inside for answers more often? Seattle's kind of like that a little bit, like a little more introspective in general, the collective here. And if that was a contribution to lift the collective's consciousness up one degree, that'd be the greatest thing I could do.
That's sweet. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, I've heard about it.
Huh? She said thinking. She wanted to know if I've read the book Thinking.
Thinking Rich.
Thinking You're Rich. Oh, really? Entrepreneur group is here? Only three of you. The whole group. Oh, okay. Are they similar? There's a white space. There's a new idea every day. And this is not an entrepreneur. This is not a book about, that's okay, but this is not the secret. This book is not. This is the core of the secret. God. This is about God. This is about happiness. This is about that. And this is also about passion and creating passion and learning to go back to passion. I spoke in front of the kids who built Twitter and Google and a whole bunch of other at the Summit Series. Summit Series. And I know somebody builds something great because it draws them in, like music draws you in, you produce these records. It's really that presence I refer to, that happiness, that direct kind of connection with your work. Work is their prayer. And then after it's over, it's like I sold it. Now what do I do? To go back and make your next job your prayer. To what does it take to really Everybody doesn't have a passion that sucks them in. The idea is to take what's in front of you and be sucked in to everything, to life in general, to find happiness in all of what's in front of you. To love everything, you know, without, I mean, look for inspiration, but love everything, even struggle. I mean, that's the practice. So reminding you of what's in the scripture, what all the prophets told you, and trying to get you to operate from that so you can be happy. And money, because money doesn't make you happy, right? But this kind of happy spirit makes you money. That's just a fringe benefit, the money thing. You in the hat, I know he's had his hand up. Last question? Well, his hand has been up for like an hour, so I'm sorry. Yeah, I have a few people, I don't know how many, but one example is in the book, the kid, he's older too, like 24 now, he's finishing college. His friend, I met him, he was 15, he was shot, and he's been shot 4 separate times, 6 bullets. His name is Jinx, he even got shot in the face. He's just lucky, I don't know, he just will not die, and but he's, you know, he comes from a place, his friends are dead and in jail, his friend that came with him, and I met him, I mean, he's had a very tough time. He's a rapper still. He was signed to Def Jam, he was 15 when he got shot, when he brought him to my office, he had been shot in the foot. They took him he was selling drugs in the wrong place, they took him in the lobby and they shot him in the projects. He's in the wrong projects. But he just, you know, well, he's a person I took on like a son. And I have a few people like that. I have another girl who's suffering from disease, and I have another kid who's going to college. And some kids are like clean cut and they're working hard and they really didn't have a family, but they're so clean cut and working hard. Some kids have a little bit of family and they just still lost this shit and they just don't, and they're suffering, but the little help matters. Everybody's starting from different positions. So I have a few people that I mentor one-on-one like that, but I have many programs. I think, I like to believe that the programs are helpful as well as, you know, the one-on-one, because I have so much time. You're my last question. A nice face, because he told me that was the last question. Well, that's a good question. My financial service company is really a phenomenal thing. It was started, at first it was going to be a charity or a social thing, because someone came to me and asked me about phone cards. Years ago, 8 years ago, and reloadable phone cards. So then my friend had a financial service company, really a collection. He had billions of dollars in debt. We went to Visa, we told Visa we'd like to make this prepaid card, a virtual bank. Because people get their check, they go to check cashing place, they get robbed, they get online, spend 8 to 12 hours a week paying their bills, they couldn't rent shit, they were locked out of the world. So we created this card, it was for the underserved. And 5 years, no profit, like every company, right, lose money. Then finally it started to pop, other companies started to sprout up around us with the same idea, but at first no one understood it. And now, you know, with the technology evolving, we build credit, we transfer money, we give discount healthcare cards, we're going to give healthcare. We are giving already budgeting tools that no one has, that we are giving. I mean, to imagine using your phone and transferring money to your mother in Mexico. You don't got to go to Western Union. You know, so many different things we're doing as part of a full financial service picture. So it's good. And then now a J.P. Morgan report comes out and says that for a lot of the middle class, it's less than half the price. And really, it could be a fraction of the price of what you pay for your free bank account. So that's a brand new thing, right? So then maybe I could be really rich, give away a whole lot of money, because it's growing very quickly. Hundreds of thousands of people are migrating from banks to this form of financial service. So that's my business. And I have a new clothing company in Macy's, in Walmart. Especially Walmart, I'm excited, because it's, you know, no one has an Argyle sweater in Walmart but me, so it's something. And then I have a bunch of other businesses, but I have a lot of charities. You know, I have a school in Africa, and a Diamond Empowerment Fund, getting money out of the diamond industry to keep giving back to education. I have a hip-hop summit, which does political and social work. I have Captain Dennis here, and it's a very, very important mission that he and I are working on, is building peacekeeper programs around the country. We're having a major test program in Queens, where we fund and support a lot of the programs and have the men patrol their own streets and take back their streets, not with violence, but with love for the community. Because sometimes the police feel like an occupying force, so to actually have men in the street is a tremendous up. You know, so that's one thing we're doing and we're working hard on. And the idea of spreading consciousness as much as I can and getting people to pay attention. And I don't know, that idea about getting people who are the underserved in America and the working poor to really have a voice is something that just came up. You know, I wrote the blog today. I think
Sometimes you write a blog or you think about something and it becomes a mess. I mean, you're really at work. His minister said, there'd be a million people in the mall. And he said he saw the words coming out. And the next thing, there was a million people. It was 2 million people on the mall. So that's how things happen. You say them and they manifest them and they become real. So that that's a big thing. I talked about what happens if Kim Kardashian starts tweeting on your ass. If she starts tweeting, it's a problem. She had more Twitter followers than the president. She does. And Puffy too. And so does Ashton Kutcher. And they're all compassionate people. And they all care about the poor. And they don't think that the money grab from the rich to the from the poor is so nice. And what happens to people like in Wisconsin, people really decide it don't have to happen somewhere else. It can happen here. So it's a big mission to really look and see where we can make change and get people engaged. Because I really believe the Tea Party. I know some people may be members of it. I really believe the Tea Party is the last dying, kicking ass racist that's getting their final chest. You know, they're kicking. They're just kicking. I don't think it's like a new... I know there's a little bit more hate in the world, but it's not a new trend. It's just people just can't believe this shit. It's a black president. Everything's just gone wrong. Gay rights, you know, people talk about animals and stuff. I mean, all these things are shocking them. So they're kicking a little bit. What happens if compassionate and loving people start kicking? It's going to be huge. So that's what I hope. So anyway, thank you.
This podcast was presented by the Seattle Public Library and Foundation and made possible by your contributions to the Seattle Public Library Foundation. Thanks for listening.